Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're back. This is Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, Dr. Jerry Mixon here, and we're going to address, James, you had a big question about, you wanted to avoid knee replacement surgery and you want to do, PRP, and your medical team is suggesting stem cells. Dr. Mixon, you know about that.
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do. Should we talk about that in just a bit?
Sure. Yeah, we're going to get to that, in just about 3 minutes, but I'm going to take a little digression here and talk a little bit about getting you guys in as patients at Longevity Medical Clinic.
Very important.
Because, well, that's what pays for the show.
That's right. This is why we're actually here.
We are here to recruit patients for Longevity Medical Clinic. Mm-hmm. And I do that by basically answering your questions, letting you know that I'm a real doctor, I know what I'm talking about, and I give a damn. But if the clinic doesn't prosper, we go off the air. It's that simple, because that's what pays for the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I need you. I want you. I need you. I want you.
That could be a song.
Anyway, I need you all to consider seriously. Mm-hmm. If getting older is what you really want to have happen to you, do you enjoy getting slower, fatter, weaker, dumber, sexless?
And sorer.
Sorer. And more aches, more pains, and less joy in life. And that's what aging usually brings to us. So Longevity Medical Clinic is designed specifically to make you strong, fast, lean, smart, sexy, and happy mm-hmm. as you can possibly be for as long in life as possible. That's why we call it Longevity Medical Clinic. But we want to give you a longer health span, not just lifespan. So what we want you to do is come on in to one of our free health analysis appointments, and we're going to take a look at your basic risk factors. We're going to do a little blood test. We're going to do an in-body, measure your muscle and fat ratios and so on. And then if we can reasonably justify it, we want you to go ahead and do a larger blood test and let us look at a whole lot of factors your family doctor has never looked at in their life. Because we want to see exactly what time and gravity are doing to you and how we can help you. Because we probably can. Almost everybody over about 35 or 40 can be made better at Longevity Medical Clinic. But the longer you wait, the fewer options we have for what we can accomplish. We can accomplish something even if you're in your late 90s. But we can do a whole lot better job for you if you'll get in as early as practical. And I don't know, you might say, well, then maybe I should have gone in 40 years ago and it's too late. It's not too late.
No.
You know, your heart is still beating, your lungs are going up and down, your brain is still functioning. It's not too late. There are things we can do. I just don't want you to put it off any longer. Get in, sign up for our Longevity Medical Clinic's health analysis. The initial analysis is free. Then once we take a look at that, if it looks like we have other things we could do, we'll offer you some of those things. You get to make a choice. We're not going to force you to do anything. But I would love it if you'll come in and let us see what we can do to help you be stronger and faster and leaner and smarter, sexier and happier. That's really what we're after.
Very good.
So.
Yes. Make that appointment today. You can do it right now. Somebody will answer the phone call and get you scheduled. And maybe you've been thinking about this for the last year or two or more. We have a lot of callers that'll say, yeah, I've been thinking about it. No, come on in. We want to meet you. Yes, we want to meet you. Be here at the studios. Get started. Here is that number. It's 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go online to lmclinic.com. Now, while you're there, you can look at the calendar, push the button that says health analysis, look at the calendar, pick the clinic closest to you, Linwood, Kirkland, Tacoma, and pick the day and the time that work best for your busy schedule. And then answer a few health questions, and we'll see you in, and we'll get you started. Okay? Yep. It's that easy. lmclinic.org, or you can call us at 866-86-YOUNG. All right, Dr. Mixon, you want to talk stem cells?
Yeah, we'll talk stem cells.
Yeah, James, if you're listening, which you say you listen every single weekend.
So hopefully you're still here.
That's right. Let's talk stem cells, especially for avoiding a knee replacement surgery.
PRP and stem cells are usually done as a combination. Some people just do PRP, and it's pretty good. It decreases pain. It decreases inflammation. There are 9 growth factors in those platelets. And so if they do just the PRP, the platelet-rich plasma, it can decrease the inflammation, and it can trigger some degree of healing. So that's good news. But taking stem cells out of either your fat or your bone marrow and injecting those into the joint along with PRP is even better, because the stem cells are actually kicking out growth factors. As long as those stem cells live in that joint space, they're going to be secreting exosomes and acellular vesicles that have RNA that will help to reprogram your own tissues to grow and heal and repair. That's what these MSCs actually are doing. The stem cells they put into your joint don't generally grow into new cartilage themselves. What they do is they produce growth factors that trigger your own cartilage to get busy and start growing. And then the PRP, the platelet-rich plasma, provides extra nutrient and extra support for those stem cells to do their job. So it's usually a combination of the two. I don't know who your team is that's doing this, but all I would say is don't use store-bought frozen stem cells. Frozen stem cells are dead. You're getting the exosomes and the acellular vesicles, but you're not getting the stem cells. And so the boost you get will be relatively short-lived. So you want your own stem cells. You want those that are taken either out of your fat or out of your bone marrow. And there's a place for both of those therapies. I know doctors who do both. I know Dr. Nelson is doing both. So, you know, you want to look at which one works best in which setting for which patient. But I think stem cells and PRP are a great idea. I haven't had it done on my knee. I have had it done on my hip, and it did a wonderful job for me. So, but I know a fair number of our patients have had it done on knees, and there's a very good success rate. It's not 100%. Nothing done to or by human beings is perfect. Nothing works for everybody, but it's minimally invasive. It only involves a few needle sticks instead of, opening up your leg and cutting off your knee and putting artificial metallic joints and components in, with a big rod up the center of your bone. I don't really want my bones and my joints amputated. I'd rather make them heal and repair and grow nice, strong, healthy new tissue instead. And that's the purpose of the stem cells and PRP. All right. I think we've attached that. So yeah, you can find Dr. Nelson if you don't have a team, but I think you mentioned your own team. So you've probably got people that are recommending you go there already. I'm going to change gears here just a little bit. We were talking a few weeks ago about breast cancer reduction in women. You know, breast cancer is the most common fatal cancer in women. It kills more women than any other cancer in America. And it's fascinating that there's so much misinformation about breast cancer. And it got worse in 2001 when that initial Women's Health Initiative study got published. And every newspaper in the country had this incredibly misleading news headline that said, hormone replacement therapy causes breast cancer. And all of a sudden, prescriptions for estrogens dropped almost to zero. And what was fascinating is over the next 7-8 years, breast cancer incidence was rising, not falling, after they stopped using estrogens.
Wow.
And what we found out was that it was not the estrogen. Women in that study were given two hormones. They were given Provera, which is a synthetic imitation of progesterone, but not real progesterone. It's different. And they were given estrogen. The estrogen alone reduces the risk of breast cancer by about 30%. The Provera raises the risk of breast cancer about 67%. And that combination with the estrogen trying to lower the risk and the progestogen raising the risk ended up with a 27% increased risk of breast cancer. We now know that estrogen is not what causes breast cancer. Estrogen lowers the risk of breast cancer. We also know that real progesterone does not raise the risk of breast cancer. But here's the newer part. We now know that testosterone dramatically lowers the risk of breast cancer. And testosterone and estrogen together are a wonderful combination to lower the risk of breast cancer. In fact, a testosterone-estrogen combination cuts the risk of breast cancer by about 2/3.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah. The SEER study that just looked at women in the United States in general who had never been on estrogens, these women have about 300 breast cancers per 100,000 women years. Women on estrogen and testosterone lower that risk to 116 cancers per 100,000 women years. So from 300 to 116, that's almost a 2/3 reduction in breast cancer. Now, I think that we need to carry that a little further. Because look at it this way. When you're when we say breast cancers, we're talking about the diagnosis of breast cancer, not when they caught, when they got breast cancer.
Just when the doctor see it
it's
and
when
said
it
this
was
is what's
big
going
enough
on. To see
and
it.
Obvious enough that it got seen, it got caught. Okay. So when a woman says, "Oh, I have breast cancer this week." No, that means we found it this week. Breast cancer starts with one cell. One little cell, and that cell becomes 2, becomes 4, becomes 8, becomes 16, and grows and grows and grows. Depending on how fast it grows, and there's a wide variation between breast cancers. Some grow very slowly, some grow very fast. The slow-growing ones, when we find one of those, you've probably had it for 10 years or more.
Wow.
That's how slow they grow. Some of them will grow really fast, and you'll have only had it for about 3 years before we find it.
But still, you will have had it for a while.
For 3 years.
Yes.
The average woman, when we diagnose a breast cancer, has actually had that cancer for 5 to 7 years.
Wow.
Now, here's where things start to get a little bit interesting from a prevention standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, are you signaling I have to take a break?
We might need to take a break, so okay. You might have to...
All right. I'm going to take a break right here. I'm going to come back and explain to you, though, why even that calculation is underestimating when we ought to be intervening.
Okay. All right. You're listening
right
to Dr.
Back.
Jerry Mixon, Leading Edge Medicine, and we will be back. Stay right there and grab the phone. If you've got a question, 800-465-8770 is that number to call. 800-465-8770.
lead, sometimes you follow. Don't worry about what you don't know. Life's a dance, you learn as you go.
Life's a dance, you learn as you go.
And that is so true. I love that song.
Yeah.
Because I wish I knew 40 years ago, some of the stuff I know today, I could have saved a whole lot more people from being sick and dying.
Oh, yeah. But we're learning so much on the show every single week. This is Leading Edge Medicine. If you just tuned in with Dr. Jerry Mixon talking about breast cancer right now.
Well, and this is an approach to breast cancer, by the way, that also applies in many respects to every cancer. If you're a man and you're talking about your prostate cancer, or you're worried like colon cancer or any other cancer, the principles I'm about to espouse here are equally important. So listen carefully, all of you. This is important.
Turn up the radio.
That's right. Get your earbuds on. The average woman has had breast cancer 5 to 7 years before we discover it, because it started as one cell and it grew and grew and grew. Cells were growing faster than they were dying, so the cancer was getting bigger and bigger over time. And finally got big enough, we discovered it. We say cancer incidence. We measure cancer incidence from when we find cancers, not from when they started.
Okay.
When we diagnose cancer is when we put it on our little chart. So breast cancer starts increasing in incidence about 40. Before 40, very few women get breast cancer, and those are usually genetically triggered, girls in their 20s that get them. But the typical breast cancer starts rising in incidence around 40 or 45, but that means the cancer actually developed around 35, not 40 or 45.
Wow.
So these cancers are actually starting in women in their 30s. We just don't see them yet because they're still too small. Okay. Now, let me move the goalpost once more. Okay. Almost never do you get a perfectly healthy cell, a perfectly healthy tissue, and suddenly there's a cancer. Mm. What happens is it goes through a process we call dysplasia. And we see this in the cervix very clearly. And we see it in skin very clearly. You start off with healthy tissues, and eventually there's some damage, some irritation, some inflammation of some sort going on. And those cells now become not so normal. They become slightly dysplastic. They are different. They are no longer healthy cells, but they're not cancer yet.
Okay.
And after a few more years, they become moderately dysplastic. And then over more time, they become severely dysplastic, and then they become malignant. So we've already moved the process back into a woman's 30s for that cancer to be developed. But the dysplasia, the abnormalities in the cells that then will eventually become a cancer in their 30s, that will grow big enough that we find it in their 40s, probably started in their late 20s.
Wow.
Now, we also know that the lower your steroid hormones in your body, your testosterone, estradiol, pregnenolone, dehydroepiandrosterone, and progesterone, six or five sex hormones, the lower those hormones drop, the higher your risk of developing the cancers. And those levels actually start to decline about 25. So you peaked at 15. When you were, ladies were 15 years old, you had the highest sex hormone levels you were ever going to have. They started to decline at 20. That became a significant decline by about 25. And that's when the dysplasia started forming in your tissues. And then in your 30s to 35 to maybe 40-ish, you developed your earliest malignant cells. And then 5 or 8 or 10 years after that, it got big enough that we found it when you were in your 40s or 50s. So if we're going to intervene, if we know that the lower the testosterone, the lower the estrogen, the lower the progesterone, the lower the dehydroepiandrosterone, the lower the pregnenolone levels are, the higher the risk of developing a cancer. When should we be intervening? And I would say we should be starting to intervene as fast as they start to decline. We should never let them decline.
Mm.
because breast cancer, prostate cancers, these cancers act for all the world as they are hormone deficiency tumors. You form them as your hormones that protect you are starting to decline. First, you develop dysplasia, and it gets worse and worse and worse, and it becomes a low-grade malignancy, and it gets worse and worse and worse, and it grows big enough that eventually, when you're 40, 45, 50, 55, 60, we find it. But the genesis for that, those abnormal first cells, were probably 20 years earlier. That's when we need to be intervening. It's 20 years before that cancer was found.
Wow.
Now, most of the time, that doesn't happen.
No.
The only woman I know that got intervened when she was in her late 20s is my wife.
I was going to say, I know your wife. I was like,
and you've seen my wife.
Yes.
You know? We have never let her hormones decline. She is turning 48 years old this month, and she still carries the hormone balance of a late 20s to early 30s woman. And you would swear she was in her early 30s.
Yes.
You know, we've never let the changes take place. And so I really wish I could get people to come to Longevity Medical Clinic and we could start intervening earlier and lower the risk. Because if we don't start intervening till you're 50, well, even intervening at 50, we can cut your risk of breast cancer by 2/3.
Wow.
What if we intervened at 40? What if we intervened at 30? How low could we get that breast cancer risk? Could we get it down by 90%? I'm guessing, and I admittedly this is a guess, but yes, I'm guessing that if when we first saw those levels starting to drop and we were to start intervening, we probably cut our breast cancer risk by about 80 to 90%.
Wow.
But women won't come in at that point.
Yeah, because they feel great.
They feel great.
They're active. They're busy.
And they
want,
and they say, well, but you see, I'm not at risk of breast cancer. And I said, no, you're wrong. You're not at risk of having your breast cancer diagnosed until you get up around 50.
Mm-hmm.
But you're on the road long before we're able to diagnose that tumor. And the sooner we intervene, I'm betting that the sooner we intervene, the lower the risk we can give you.
There you go. Just another reason to come to Longevity.
Yep.
And become one of our patients. And come in and make that free health analysis appointment. Would that be a good thing
to
do?
That would be great. You start in, get your free analysis, mm-hmm. talk to our people, see what we can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say then go ahead, spring for the big blood test.
Yep.
Let us narrow things down, and then let us treat you. Let us lower your risk of dementia, heart attacks, strokes, osteoporosis, degenerative joint disease, breast cancer, colon cancer, liver cancer, ovarian cancer, all those cancers, all those terrible things that go with getting older. Let us intervene as early and as effectively as you will permit us. Mm-hmm. But the earlier you'll come in, the more we can do for you. That's the fact of life. If you put it off, we'll still do our best, mm-hmm. and we'll be better than doing nothing. But the sooner you come see us, the better off you're going to be.
Here's that number. You got your pen and paper? Write it down and call us. We give it to you each week, but here, in case you need it, it's 866-86-YOUNG to get in for that health analysis and find out what your body is, what's been going on in your body. 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, which is lmclinic.com. Ready for a phone call, Dr. Mixon?
Let's take it.
We've got it. Kevin calling in from Bothell. Hi there, Kevin. Thank you for calling.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for what you do every morning here. You could be sleeping in. I am 64. I'm a patient at your Linwood Clinic.
Uh-huh.
I've resisted this for years, but I'm being told I should be on a statin. And I was just kind of curious about your general feeling about them because I think they're completely overprescribed and don't seem to do much for most people. You haven't had a heart attack, but you seem to kind of thread the line on those. And then I asked you about my specific, I guess. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Well, no, statins are useful drugs for some people. I mean, they are critical for some folks. But I agree with you. They're overprescribed. As soon as some doctors see that cholesterol is out of their comfort zone, they want to throw people on a statin. Most of the time, by raising the end organ hormones, the testosterone, pregnenolone, dehydroepiandrosterone, et cetera, then diet and lifestyle factors will be enough to bring those cholesterol levels under good control. But for some people, it's not. Some people are just genetically coded, it seems, to make really high cholesterol.
What I'm asking is, are the blood lipid, levels that we're supposed to be aiming for, is that even all that useful, I guess? I hear that there's different sizes of LDL particles. One matters and
that's
one
right.
doesn't. And
yes.
And it, it's bad for your brain to interfere with these lipids and on and on and on. I don't know what to believe.
Well, if you're one of our patients and your cholesterol has been high, I hope they have done a lipid fractionation for you and looked at particle sizes and fractionated your LDL and your HDL into three different factors and looked at your APO little O or little A. Have they done that test for you?
Is that something beyond the regular labs?
It's something, significantly beyond the regular labs. And, it costs a couple of $100 or so, I think, but it breaks down your cholesterol into the subfractions that tells us how much risk are you really at. Because some people have high total cholesterols, high LDLs, but their subfractions are such that they're really not in much risk.
And what's the name of this test?
There is the Boston group does some. I don't know which one the docs up in Linwood are using, but there's about three different labs that'll all fractionate them for us, and I know we've used them all three.
If you talk
to your doc and just say, hey, my lipids are high, I'd like to get them subfractionated, and I'd like to get my particle size, because they actually break down the lipid particles into different sizes and different types. And some are a lot more dangerous than others. So that...
Okay. Here's my brief situation, I guess.
Okay, hold on one second.
Yes.
Hold it. We got to take a quick break, but as soon as we come back, tell me all about your situation, okay?
Yep. Okay,
we'll
Kevin,
right back.
You hang on the line.
Sure.
We're going to take a fast break, and then we will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. And phone lines are open for your call to get in on the last half hour. Just like Kevin, just like Lori, Lynn, Rick, and Alex did today. Here's the number. It's 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon, and taking your calls. We're on the air with you until 10 o'clock this morning. 1-800-465-8770. Kevin from Bothell on the line. We've been talking about cholesterol and statins.
Okay, Kevin, let's hear your story.
So this came up because in last month I had a quote-unquote minor TIA, no lasting effects, thankfully. I don't know if genetics plays into this at all, but my dad dropped out of a heart attack at 51. My brother has had two. The scan of my head, I was curious because in 2006, my left vertebral artery had a dissection and pseudoaneurysm. There's now a stent and some coiling there. That looked fine. He said there wasn't really any evidence of arterial plaque on that scan. I don't know if that relates to the rest of my arteries or not. But that's kind of why, I've got the PCP and the Swedish neuroscience both telling me to get on a statin. I'm on Plavix for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I got, if you want to know my labs, I got them sitting here right in front of me. But I guess on balance, does that make sense, or is this further testing?
You know, I do the further testing, but I would, here's what I would put you on. I would do a statin. I would do testosterone. I would do a PDE5 inhibitor, such as tadalafil. And
yes, I'm on both all of those, or last two, yes.
Good. Okay. And I would indeed keep you on something to, you know, to either high dose omega-3s and or a mild anticoagulant. Those are all pretty good ideas. And that's just because you have a terrible family history. And so right. Genetically, you're predisposed to do this.
Oh, and one other thing. I have a dolichoestasia, some stretched vein in my brain, just to add to the mix.
Okay, yeah. So you got a little birth defect.
I don't know about it now, but you need scans every 2 years or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Because if it's growing, stretching, looks like you may get a rupture or a tear, you're going to have a neurosurgeon go in and clip it. Oh, okay. Shucky darn, yes. You know, sometimes we win the genetic lottery, and sometimes we don't do so well. You've got a lot of risk factors. So the reason I like the fact that you're on all of the things you're on, but I would add the statin to it. Statin,
I would.
Is that combination, our worst people for dropping dead are diabetics. You know, they have about 30% of them will drop dead of a cardiovascular event. If we
put them... And I do have high A1C, but I'm finally working on that with diet.
Good.
If that fails, I'll, you know, she mentioned metformin, but I'd rather just eat like an adult first and see how that works.
Okay, but metformin also, we know, extends lifespan. It is an anti-aging, lifespan-extending drug. People who use metformin, diabetics typically die younger than the rest of us, but even diabetics on metformin live 5 years longer than the rest of us.
And metformin, there's really no downside to any of these things, assuming...
Oh, I didn't say that.
Effect.
No. I never said that.
Okay.
Dr. Mixon, you're not diabetic, and you take...
And I take it.
Yeah.
Darn right.
All right.
Yeah. Each one of these drugs has their own adverse effects, okay? And the one that probably has the most adverse effects is the statin. So there are people that simply do not do well on the statins. In fact, it's much higher than I wish it was. It's up around 1/3 of the people that are on statins will find significant side effects. Fuzzy thinking, memory problems, muscle weakness or muscle pain. So some people don't tolerate statins very well. That's just the real world. Although, interestingly, if you don't tolerate one statin, switching to another statin, you might tolerate it perfectly well. I'm not quite sure why, but I don't know how to predict which statin any given the person's going to have problems with. But some people have no problems with them at all. And so it's just that we hear a lot from the folks that don't like them or that have problems with them. And since most people...
I was on one years ago and didn't have any muscle aches or any of that stuff. But
yeah,
I haven't taken
one
in 20 years, so...
Okay.
I think that was Crestor. I don't remember what it was, but...
Well, and Crestor is one of the betters, yeah. But
I'm on atorvastatin now.
Okay. Are you having problems with it?
At your clinic, it's only been 2 weeks, but no, none. I've already got issues with brain fog, but that's been the last year, so that's a different topic for another day.
Okay.
But I noticed the doctor preferred another one, which I rosuvastatin or something like that. Not at all. I'm going to eat grapefruit, which would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Apparently grapefruit's fine with some, but not others. But
that's right. It is true. Yeah.
That's not a deal breaker. But all right. Well, I will continue with that and think about the metformin. We'll talk about that at my next visit at the clinic. And I appreciate your feedback.
You're welcome, sir. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. The thing I wanted to get across to her, though, and so I hope you're still listening, by being on the statin, the testosterone, and the PDE5 inhibitor, those three lower your risk of dying from a cardiovascular, or at least drops a diabetic's risk of dying from a cardiovascular event from 30% to 2%.
Wow. That's
a huge drop. Much more. Statin alone lowers it about 8 or 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Those three together drop it 98% reduction from 30% to 2%.
Wow.
Big reduction.
Okay. So why do you think people are afraid of using the statins? You know, they're hearing, is it because of what they're seeing? You know, the
some people have significant problems with the statins.
Okay.
And if somebody's not having problems, if they take the drug and feel fine, they don't say anything about it. They take their pills and keep their mouth shut. If you take a pill and it causes your muscles to ache and you feel weak and you're getting dizzy and you can't think, you tell one and all.
Yes.
And so we hear a lot about the side effects, but some people do wonderful on statins. I don't object to statins for people who need them, but if there are better ways to do it, I would prefer to use the other methods. But this is a guy who has a horrible genome, a terrible family history, personal risk factors that put him at high risk. I would throw everything at him I can. And yes, each thing we add is going to have its own individual adverse effects. So he needs to know them and watch for them. And his doctors need to be watching for them. But there's ways to mitigate those issues. And let's face it, better than stroking out or dying of a heart attack. And he's at risk of both.
Mm-hmm. He's already had the, what do you say, a
TIA.
Minor? Yeah,
TIA, which is just, it's a mini stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And a person who has had a real TIA has almost a 30% chance of stroking in the next 5 years.
Wow.
So, yes, let us get him on everything we know that's got a good chance of helping.
Very good. Okay, now what about, you know, the side effects you get on that, you have some side effects for a week or two. Will those go away?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it worth staying on it for a little bit longer?
Yes. Yeah. When people start with something, what we would normally do is if you're getting an adverse effect, you lower the dose.
Okay.
See if the adverse effects go away. Give them time to adjust to it and then slowly raise the dose back up and see if they tolerate it as you gently raise the dose.
Okay. Like metformin. That's one of those. It's like, oh, no, I hated it for a day. And it's like, well, give it more than a day or two.
Yeah. Metformin, you know, the primary side effects that people notice are abdominal cramping and diarrhea.
Tummy stuff. Yeah.
So you drop the dose way down. You take it for a month. You raise it a little bit. You take it. You raise it again. You take it. You raise it again. You take it. And give your gut a chance to adjust. And most people tolerate a full therapeutic dose with no side effects. They do have to take higher doses of B vitamins because it does interfere with B vitamin metabolism. You need more B vitamins in your bowel. But, you know, it's not a great hardship to take an extra B vitamin each morning.
There you go. Yeah.
So.
All right. We are going to take a quick break here. Time for your phone call. We've got room for you. 800-465-8770. Phone lines are open. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
If the devil danced in empty pockets, he'd have a ball in mind. With a 9-foot grand, a 10-piece band, and a 12-foot chorus line. I'd raise some loot in a 3-piece suit, give one dance for a dime. If the devil danced in empty pockets, he'd have a ball in mind.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon. Dr. Samira, you met out of the studio today, the weekend off, and we are talking, well, we've been talking about cancers and
seems
breast cancer.
I have several cancer today, yeah.
Yeah, colon cancer, and we just happen to have something coming up at our clinics, very important. The Galleri test is back.
You know, it's interesting. February is Cancer Awareness Month.
Mm-hmm.
And so in February, in honor of Cancer Awareness Month, we are bringing the Galleri test back to all three of our clinics. And it is a test, a simple blood test that tests for 50 different cancers.
Wow.
That's not all the cancer types in the world.
No, but that's a bunch of them.
And it is a screening test, but it's looking for proteins dumped into your blood by the cancers. And by which proteins it is and the pattern of those proteins, they can narrow it down pretty closely. We can say, well, this looks like a gastrointestinal cancer. We need to look for colon. Or this looks like it's pancreatic markers, and so we need to take a close look at your pancreas. So it is about $1,250, so it is not, you know, the world's cheapest test. On the other hand, it's only $25 per cancer.
Wow, if you're looking at it that way.
Yeah. So, you know, for $25 to check for breast, $25 for colon, $25 for, for, you know, thyroid, $25 for colon, we say, hey, that's not so bad.
Yeah, this is something we've been wanting for years. Now we've got a test that screens for this.
That's right. Now, it's not covered by insurance yet. But then again, I'd go ahead and do it simply because, well, I don't want to die of cancer and then insurance starts to cover it. That would be stupid. So we have a test. It is available. We don't know if and when Medicare will get around to covering it. Maybe in a year, maybe in 10 years. But you can get it now at Longevity Medical Clinic. Is it February?
February 10th.
February 10th.
That's a Saturday. And that is at all three of our clinics, Linwood and, let's see, Kirkland and Tacoma. All three clinics will be doing this. And you do need to get a scheduled. So, and this is not just for longevity patients. We've been able to do this for a long time. But this is for non-patients of longevity. You have the this option to get the Galleri test. So give us a call and get scheduled for that. 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. Okay, and it looks like, whoops, let's see here. We have some, the phones just went woo with a bunch of callers. So let's get a phone, let's get a caller on the line right now. Okay. Let's see. Let's have our producer go with Patrick from Puyallup. Hi there, Patrick. How can we help you? This is Leading Edge.
Yeah, thank you. I have a left brachial branch blockage, and I'm wondering what type of maybe hormone treatment I would benefit from. I've had a number of incidents of syncope. Otherwise, I'm in good health, but, you know, obviously I want to be around a while.
Yeah.
Okay. What is this, doctor? Sounds heart related.
Well, it is.
Okay.
And this is what I'm just about to ask him is, do you have, I presume they scanned all of your arteries?
I did an echocardiogram, and I believe the LBBB is something that I was born with. I never had, you know, kind of an incident other than the syncope.
Okay. Well, interesting. Bundle branch blocks are... Well, they often develop during life, so I have not followed somebody that had one as a genetic or as a birth issue. Not a whole lot you can do at this point. You're how old?
64.
Okay. And you've had mild syncope, or you actually fall down with it?
I've had some... both. Some incidents where I've fallen down. It's more typical when I've bent over to grab something, and that's obviously doesn't happen always, but maybe a couple times a year it'll occur.
Okay. And your cardiologist is following you along very closely?
Yeah. You know, at one point... I went to one that thought, you know, I was a candidate for a pacemaker, but I elected not to do that. I went to a cardiologist, and he said,
What did the electrophysiologist say? You dropped off for a moment.
Went to a cardiologist about and he suggested a pacemaker. Went to a different one and said, no, probably not a candidate at this point for a pacemaker.
Okay. All right, because that was exactly what I was wondering. You know, bundle branch blocks, there are several big bundles. There's the left bundle and then the couple of right bundles. And these actually carry the electrical impulse along the heart to the different aspects of the heart muscle to make it contract in a nice, efficient way to pump blood the way it's supposed to. And they also are supposed to respond to your exercise, to your cardiac needs at any given moment. A bundle branch block is where one of these major fiber bundles that carry the electrical impulse is not working well. I've seen a fair number of these in older folks that have had mild cardiovascular disease, and you know the microcirculation has just gone bad over time, and they can progress. They can get worse and worse with age. And the only real fix for them that I'm aware of is to put in a dual chamber pacemaker so that you're getting having a machine is causing this heart to beat in an organized manner instead of having the intrinsic fibers of your heart's own electrical system do the job. I can't really think of any hormone that is going to change that. I would be interested, obviously, in taking a good look at all of your lipids, your cholesterols, and do fractionation of those. Testosterone in a man of your age helps the heart along with every other muscle in your body. And it's also a vasodilator, so it opens up the blood vessels to get better perfusion. You had asked about hormones specifically, but the PDE5 inhibitors, something like tadalafil, is a vasodilator again, opens up those blood vessels, provides better perfusion to every part of your body, and lowers your risk of heart attacks again. So if you were at our clinic, I would probably be starting with those two. But I'd want you to have very, very close association with a cardiologist who's monitoring your EKGs over time. And so that if we get to the point you need a pacemaker, you get it put in early instead of too late.
Okay. Would if I engage with your clinic, would my echo or my cardiologist, would he send over, you know, my tests?
Yeah, we'd have you sign a release of information, and we'd send over to get all of your medical records from your cardiologist. Absolutely. And we'd want you to keep him appraised of everything we were doing.
All right. Yeah, I think, you know, I saw him like every year and then every 2 years, and now it's like every 3 years. So, you know, not scheduled to see him for a while here. But
okay.
All right. Hey, this has been educational. I really appreciate it, Dr. Mixon.
All right.
Thank you for your call, Patrick.
Thank you for the call. We appreciate you.
All right. We've got time for one more call. We're headed to Bremerton. We have Ed on the line. Hi there, Ed.
Hello, Ed.
Hi, Lynette. Hi, doctor. I'm actually calling with a question about eating grapefruit. But before I get to that, let me give you some background. I'm a type 2 diabetic, have been for at least 20 years, currently on metformin. I'm up to the max now, which is 1,000 milligrams twice a day.
Uh-huh.
And if I cross somebody for the first time who I've never met before, and in the course of talking, my age comes out, which is 72.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at me amazed, and they go, "You're not 72." And I go, "Yeah, I am. How old do you think I am?" And I've gotten ages from 55 to 63.
Wow.
Even wow, good 70. Job.
Yeah.
That's good.
I have very few wrinkles, Most of them were on my forehead, which I've had since I was probably 35 or 40. But anyway, my question is, you were talking about some people can eat grapefruit and some people can't. And I'm wondering what the deciding factor is.
Oh, with the medication interaction. Yeah.
Well, grapefruits interfere with some enzymes in our liver that we use for metabolizing a lot of medications. And so those enzymes will often result in the blood levels of the medicine going much higher than we had planned on. So it's just a matter of, we don't want you overdosing on your medicines. Some medicines are affected by grapefruit and some aren't. But, you know, for instance, one of the popular ones in our field right now, the rapamycin, you can raise your rapamycin dose 200-300% by taking it with grapefruit.
Oh, wow.
So, does that answer your question?
Generally, it's you would feel that it's probably okay for most people, maybe
for most people,
to grapefruit.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I enjoy grapefruit from time to time. You know, I don't have grapefruit breakfast on the morning I take my rapamycin. Go on. Maybe I should. but yes, it's just that if you're on cardiac medicines, if you're on medicines where the blood level is quite critical, you just want to make sure that the CYPs that metabolize it are not interfered with by the grapefruit. That's all.
Okay. Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Ed. That was a good question. So many times you'll hear that real quick at the doctor, you know, hey, I'm going to put you on this. Don't drink, you know, don't eat grapefruit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the CYPs are a class of enzymes in the liver that break down a lot of the medicines. And that's just, you know, if you're on many medicines, a little grapefruit's not going to make a difference. But
okay.
On some, it really can.
Especially having a big grapefruit every morning. That
yes,
can make a
or
big
grapefruit juice.
Ah.
People will drink a lot more juice than they would get from eating the grapefruit.
Okay. All right. Woo, we've learned so much today, as usual, on Leading Edge Medicine. Our time is almost out with just 1 minute to go. We were just talking about the Galleri tests. Yes, we're scheduling those. That is the test that will screen for 50 types of cancers. And so many of you have asked, are you going to do this again? Yes, we are. The month of February,
yep.
Cancer Awareness Month. And it's
February
happening.
February 10th.
Mm-hmm. February 10th. That's a Saturday at all three of our clinics. And you do not have to be a longevity patient for this, but you do need to have an appointment for it. Call and get the details, get the cost, and find out more, and don't miss out on this opportunity for the Galleri test. That number to call for the Galleri test and for the health analysis appointment, like Patrick was saying, you know what, I should probably get into you guys. Yes, you should. Here is that number to call, 866-86-YOUNG, or you can go to our website and get the details too, lmclinic.com. Have a great rest of your weekend. Stay warm, and we'll be back live next weekend right here for Leading Edge Medicine.